Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. This podcast is a series of conversations centered around understanding the values, beliefs, and intentions behind leaving a legacy. You will hear from successful business owners just like yourself who want to leave an impact for generations to come. Let's get started. Welcome to the Business Legacy Podcast. I am Paul Dio, and we have a very special guest, a veteran-owned business owner, also CPA, Charles Reed of Get Payroll. Charles, thank you for being here, actually. Yeah.
Paul, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
This might be a little bit of a long-winded answer, but tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, I'm a Midwestern boy. I grew up in Iowa, graduated from high school at 16, wasn't ready for college, worked for a while, joined the Marine Corps, spent 4 years on active duty in the United States Marine Corps, 2 years overseas, combat stint in Vietnam, came back, was stationed in Kansas City, married my wife. She had 5 kids when I married her. I just claim insanity. But we were married for 45 years before she passed. After military, tried to find jobs, and most of the businesses would not give me credit for the knowledge that I'd learned in the Marine Corps. And I'd been trained as a computer programmer and a systems engineer by IBM. But since it was military, they didn't think it applied to business. They're not much better today. So after a couple of years, I went to college, got my degrees, my bachelor's, my master's, sat for and passed my CPA exam, went to work for Texas Instruments. Spent 15 years in corporate world, big companies, small companies, turnarounds, a lot of great experience. Realized I was never going to run a major corporation. I didn't have the political skills. I was unwilling to stab people in the back and toss them off the ladder. So if I wanted to run a business, and I grew up in a family-owned business, I was going to have to start my own. So 30 years ago, Ruth, my wife, and I started our own business. And here we are 30 years, here I am 30 years later.
Wow. I mean, 4 decades of experience, 4 decades of different life-changing events.
Absolutely.
What would you say, especially with all that you've gone through, what were you thinking in terms of starting a business with your wife? Because that's not exactly the easiest thing to do.
Well, I grew up in a business. I literally grew up in it. I did work for my parents. My parents worked together all of my life. So I thought working with your spouse was normal. Working with your spouse is not a natural act, okay?
Yeah.
Definitely. It's an acquired skill and an acquired taste.
Yeah.
And we made it work. It took some adjustments on both of our parts because she was a far better people person than I was, and it was my expertise in tax and accounting. So it couldn't be yes, dear, which I learned, as every married man does, is the two most important words in a marriage. Mm-hmm. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. Well, it can't be that in the business that I'm the professional in. So we had to make those adjustments. We also had to make personal adjustments. She had a real bad habit. And I get to tell the stories that she's not here anymore. She had a real bad habit. We'd go home after dinner, do whatever we did, get into bed. And after we got into bed, she'd have one more thing about work. One more problem that she wanted to get off her chest.
Oh, interesting.
So she'd tell me about it. And then she'd roll over and go to sleep. And I'd sit there and worry about it until 2 or 3 in the morning. So we had to come to an agreement that after dinner, no more business. Mm-hmm. Now, that meant some dinners were very late, but after dinner, no more business. Mm-hmm.
That's phenomenal. That's great. Given that you've been in this role or in this industry for decades, what have you noticed about the landscape of payroll or just the landscape of tax in general over the past 4 decades, actually?
Well, in payroll particularly, technology has changed. And it's changed everywhere, but I see it very much in payroll. The software, the equipment, the computers, this used to be done by hand. Everybody would call in their payroll numbers. we don't have, I think, maybe a handful of people who still call in their payroll. Mm-hmm. They'd gone to fax and then email, and now it's all on in the cloud, on the web. Technology has gotten better. We do direct deposits. Almost all of our payments to employees are direct deposits. We do very few checks anymore. My vendor called me here a couple of years ago and said, Charles, what do we need to do to get your business back? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you haven't ordered checks in a year and a half. And I said, well, yeah, because we're not using them.
Yep.
So things have really changed. You know, I remember when fax machines came in, and they were wonderful, and now they're passe. The mm-hmm. only people that really use the fax machines anymore is the IRS. And that's their advanced technology. Some of their stuff goes back to the 1960s. So technology has changed. Systems have changed. How you pay people has changed. Dealing with the IRS hasn't changed much. Mm-hmm. There's still 100,000 employees, civil servants, that are in many cases using technology that goes back to the 1960s. So it's a mess, and I don't know if it's ever going to get better. And it changes continually. And then the last 13 years, the laws have just been in disarray. They changed constantly under the Obama administration and under the Trump administration. Now back under the Biden administration, things change and rechange and unchange and change again. And if you're not up to speed on it and keep up with it, you'll be lost. Mm-hmm. I get 5 newsletters a week from the IRS. I take all the trade journals and I keep up with it, and my people do. But for a businessman to keep up with it, it's impossible. You just can't run your business and be an expert at what you do and keep up with payroll and taxes. I used to be an investment advisor. I was a stockbroker. I carried a 7 and a 66 license. Mm-hmm. I gave them up because I couldn't keep up with the market and keep up with the tax laws. My day was not long enough to do both. So I had to make a choice. And I chose to give up the investment side and stick with the tax and payroll side as my primary focus, because it just wasn't enough time anymore.
You would definitely spread yourself too thin to have having a tax practice and an investment advisory practice.
Absolutely. And yeah. I mean, the industry, the accounting industry still pushes CPAs to do that and become trusted advisors for investments. But if you're a big enough firm and you can have somebody that specializes in it and somebody else that does the taxes, that's fine. But the sole practitioner or the small firm just doesn't have the depth of people to be able to do it effectively.
For business owners who don't know the difference between the larger organizations of payrolls and the small organizations with payroll, how do you differentiate that? I'm curious.
Well, when you call my major competitors, you normally either get a call center or you have a dedicated rep that's so overloaded he can't talk to you. Mm-hmm. They're vast bureaucracies. They are out to satisfy shareholders. In my company, there's 2 shareholders. My right-hand person and myself own the company. Take Paychex, for example. Tom Galassano, who started and very successful, is retired and gets $50 million a year in dividends. That money has to come from someplace, and it comes from the clients. So they're paying investors, they're paying stockholders, they're paying founders, huge sums of money. ADP pays out hundreds of millions of dollars in dividends. It comes out of their client's pocket. We don't. It's just me. And, you know, I make a nice living, but I don't fly a private jet, and I don't have a Rolls Royce, and I don't have a cook and a chef and a chauffeur and, you know, Armani suits and so on. So, mm-hmm. you know, we live nicely, but it's not spectacular by any stretch. That's one of the things. They have to generate that money to pay all their investors. Gusto has to be able to pay their venture capitalists who've invested hundreds of millions of dollars, and they want their money back. Mm-hmm. So we're a small firm, veteran owned. I started it and I own it, and we don't have any debt other than the mortgage on the building. So, you know, we don't need a whole lot. Then beyond that, when you're dealing with a call center and you never can get the same person twice, And then the biggest thing between us and our competitors is I'm a CPA. I'm a U.S. tax court practitioner, which lets me practice in U.S. tax court without being an attorney for my clients. You don't get professional advice from our major competitors. They don't want to take the risk of having a professional advise a client and the potential if they advise them wrong.
Makes sense.
A professional. This is what I do for a living. I know my business. I'm very experienced at it. And I will give you professional advice and keep you out of trouble and defend you with the IRS. Most of my competitors won't because of the risk and the liability. Mm-hmm. I think it's foolish, but that's the way that's their business plan. They don't provide professional payroll advice and professional payroll knowledge. They have people who know their system and can teach you how to operate it. But if you've got an off-the-wall tax question or employment tax question, or the IRS screws up and makes a mistake and they make millions of them, they'll tell you to talk to your CPA. And if your CPA really understood payroll, he'd be doing it for you already. You have to go out and pay somebody to learn how to defend a situation that they already know and should be able to take care of you for, but they don't.
That makes perfect sense. $50 million in dividends, huh?
One person.
One person, yeah. Which actually brings up a unique point. So mentioning just your overall lifestyle, being an Army veteran, going from Marine veteran. Yeah, I better not make that mistake, right? Marine
Once
veteran.
Once a Marine, always a Marine.
I love that we can edit these podcasts. So being in that arena and then growing up in humble just in Iowa, how has your view of money changed over the years?
I've never been avarice. I've never wanted money for money's sake. I like what money can do. But I grew up, you know, in a small business in a small town. You know, I collected Pepsi bottles for the 2-cent deposit. That was my spending money. I worked for my father in his business and got paid pennies, but I worked for it. So money has always been important to me, and I value money for what it can do. I'm never going to be Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos or whoever. Don't particularly want to be. You know, if I win the lotto, it'd be nice. You know, I wouldn't turn it down. But, you know, I live a nice life. I have a nice house. I drive a reasonable car. I can take a vacation now. In the first 10 years, there were no vacations. So life's good. Success is not about money. Success is about happiness. Success is about enjoying yourself. I enjoy coming to work. Mm-hmm. I'm 72 years old. I like coming to work. My staff asks me when I'm going to retire. I say, one of these days, you're going to come into my office and find me dead at my desk. I've retired.
It seems like you and it's an extension of who you are, where you're having a good time.
It is. And I've got great people that work for me. You know, I couldn't do it myself. I've got great people. And my real job now is to remove problems for them, make them able to be more efficient, more effective, more educated, get more done. That's my job, is to make their life here at work easier, more effective.
Where did that mindset come from? Because that can be a little bit challenging when you first start a company. Oh. You're doing everything yourself, and then now it's not about you, it's about everybody else. Where did that come from?
It comes from the Marine Corps. Marine Corps, mission, men, self. You accomplish the mission regardless, whatever it takes. Then you take care of your people. You take care of your men. You see to it that they're taken care of, they're fed, whatever. Then you come in. And that's a real fallacy in a lot of corporate business, is there's way too much ego. People think, you know, they started the business, they're Mr. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry to tell you this, but Mr. Wonderful, if they all quit, you're bankrupt. Mm-hmm. You're out of business. If you don't take care of them, you're being foolish. Your people are your most important asset. maybe behind your clients, because your clients provide the money to be able to take care of your people, but your people take care of the clients. So it's a symbiotic relationship. You as the CEO or the owner should be last. I got a real good example of this in the Marine Corps. We were at guerrilla warfare school in Northern Okinawa. We'd been out in the field for probably a week living off of sea rations before MREs. And we finally got a hot meal delivered out one day. And the lieutenant, who was the platoon commander, made sure that every one of us got fed before he got a plate. He could have gone first. Nobody would have objected. I mean, he was the lieutenant. He made sure every one of us got fed first. And that's leadership. And that's taking care of your men first. I'm threatening to write a book called Park Your Ego at the Door. Because way too many companies I've seen go under because the owner founder has an ego that's bigger than all outdoors and likes to exercise and show it. I had a boss one time, worked for him for about 4 years. He'd take everybody outside about once a year and say, point out the name on the building that was his name. Actually, it was his father's. He inherited the business. And he'd say, if you don't like that, you don't need to come back inside. Great way to build morale and camaraderie and efficiency. Yeah. You agree?
I can't imagine the turnover rate based on that, that leadership.
Well, it was relatively high. And when I left, he had taken a bonus program that I devised and put in for the salespeople that made them good money, but they were always more productive because of it. And he decided they were making too much money. So he killed the bonus program. 3 months later, the sales manager and the better half of the sales force in mass quit and went to a direct competitor and took all their clients. 3 months later, he was bankrupt.
Yeah.
Because he let his ego get in the way.
Really, really insightful. I mean, throughout your career, you must have made a lot of decisions, a lot of business decisions, a lot of important decisions. What would you consider your best business decision?
My best business decision was going into business with my wife. She was a very common sense person, great people person. She used to have a saying. I was the balloon that would pull her up to heights she couldn't imagine, and she was the anchor that kept me from floating away. So the pair of us were successful. Neither one of us would have been as successful without the other. And that was my best business decision, is starting a business with her.
Might be life decision too. Best life decision.
My life decision, my best decision was marrying Ruth. Hands down, without a doubt, marrying Ruth was the best thing I ever did.
Got to talk to my wife when I get home. Now, let's switch over to the other side, which is there's good decisions and bad decisions. What is the worst decision you've ever made, business decision
you've ever made? I let my ego get in the way, and I thought I could market.
Got it.
And when I finally got around to hiring a marketing person, I realized within a month that I can't market my way out of a paper bag. My company would be substantially larger if I hadn't let myself convince myself that I knew what I was doing and something I didn't know how to do. That was a lesson well learned. But yeah, I can't market my way out of a paper bag, and I thought I could. So I didn't know myself as well as I should have.
So back to the overall premise behind the podcast, you know, when you think of legacy, it's a two-part question. When you think of legacy, what do you think of? And then the second part question is, what type of legacy do you want to leave?
Well, legacy is your immortality, because we're, you know, life's a fatal disease. None of us are going to outlive it. As you get older, and like I said, I'm 72. I have a different viewpoint than I did 20 years ago. Legacy is not as important to me. The company is going to go to the employees. My kids are well grown. My baby's 56. So 57, excuse me. So the company is going to go to the employees. my wealth is going to go to a foundation that's already established, and it's going to be the Ruth Reed Memorial Scholarship Fund. That's where all my money's going. So my immortality is going to be Ruth, and she will be known for some indeterminate time by deserving students every year that need some help with their education. That's my legacy. She was the most important thing in my life, and I want her to live forever.
You got me thinking about a lot. You're probably the first guest to really stop me in my tracks, because that's a, such a beautiful thing that you just said. So
based really gonna on, have to talk to your wife tonight.
Yeah, definitely. So based on the lessons you've learned along your life, if you were to restart or look at yourself when you were starting your business, what advice would you give yourself?
Well, first of all, I would have invested more money. I would have taken an extra $5 a week that I never would have missed and put it away, and then 10 and then 20. And I live much more comfortably today and have a better legacy for Ruth. That's the biggest thing that I didn't do when I was young. I wish that I had delegated some things earlier on. But hiring non-cost center people is tough. When we hired our first, and at that point in time, they were secretaries who didn't make money, didn't bill. She had no revenue herself. But we found out almost instantaneously how much time it freed up for us to allow us to bill more money and do more things. Mm-hmm. So she made her salary back several times over, almost immediately. That was a mistake that I had made early on, and I wish I had corrected it sooner. And there were others where I probably could have taken some of those hats off and put them on other people's heads. And that's ego, and my ego's not as big as it used to be. I've learned I'm not as good as I thought I was.
Yep.
Over time. So delegation, hiring the right people, obviously, is important. And that's where Ruth was so important. Only one time did I overrule her on who we were going to hire. And I regretted it both personally and professionally. She was right and I was wrong, because she was a far better people person than I was.
This has been phenomenal. You sparked an idea, a conversation, maybe a forecasted or foreshadowed fight in the future, but you know, a productive fight. But thank you, Charles. For the listeners out there that is listening to this podcast, where can we find you and where can we learn more about you?
Well, getpayroll.com. It's on the web. We are a payroll provider. We provide payroll services to small and medium-sized businesses around the country. If you've got a question, a concern, or a need with payroll or payroll-related services, give me a call. My email is cjr@getpayroll. The number's on the website. You can call me and ask for me, ask for Charles, and I'll talk to you.
Great. Thanks, Charles.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Legacy Podcast. Now, if you can do us a favor and leave a review, any type of stars on any platform that you use, it would be greatly appreciated. For more information about us, the other co-hosts, and the Legacy Podcast, go to businesslegacypodcast.com. That's businesslegacypodcast.com. Have a great day.